Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:24 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is October 15th. Well, I thought we'd kick off today with a couple of questions. I think the first is that there are a number of big consensus trades. So what are they? I think the first broad conclusion is that interest rates can't possibly rise from here. There is a massive amount of debt. This has been accumulating for decades already, but it absolutely accelerated this year. And there is a broad conclusion that there is just no way that governments can tolerate higher interest rates. The move that would represent in terms of interest expense on existing debt would be catastrophic for government finances. It would greatly increase deficits. And then, of course, that problem is compounding over time. And the cuts to services are just something that nobody is willing to tolerate any longer. We've been through a decade of austerity, and people are voting against austerity left and right. So the big question then is, what are central banks and governments going to do to stop interest rates from rising? The 10-year Treasury yield has collapsed over the course of the last 2 years. Back in 2018, there was a clear assumption that this was a base formation completion, that it was moving back above the 3.25% level. There was a clear rationale for why there might be new inflationary pressures, or that the central bank was finally having to raise interest rates. Then all of that went to hell, and we had this incredible rally in bonds. By the time we got down to the lows in March, there was another clear consensus conclusion that we were going to see all bonds everywhere move into a negative yielding environment. There was, I think it was something upwards of 17 trillion was with a negative yield. What I find particularly interesting right now is that the number of bonds with negative yields has in fact broken higher. So it is being led higher by the European area. And we're almost back to the peak in negative yielding debt that was seen all the way back in August of 2019. But the big question is that if bonds are moving into negative yielding territory, and central banks have pretty much stopped increasing the size of their respective balance sheets, and the increase in M2 has moderated considerably, then we don't have a great deal of evidence that there's a lot of stimulative activity going on. Then when we think about what's going on in terms of the fiscal front, well, governments have already increased their deficits really quite considerably, and there is some reticence to do that any further. We can most acutely see that in the USA, where the entire process has become completely politicized, and they are unlikely to agree a new fiscal plan until after the election in less than 3 weeks' time. Between now and then, I think there is the possibility that we're going to see yields rise. This looks like a bullish chart overall. There's a clear evidence of a base formation evolving and support coming through for the yield around 50 basis points. We have a sequence of higher reaction lows since August. It was well off the low in here today. And there's the potential that we're going to go back up and test the upper side of the range, which is around the 1% level. And that would be above the 200-day moving average. When we look out at the longer end of the curve, it spent some time above the 200-day moving average last week, and then it was off the lows in here today and firming from around this 1.5% level. Obviously, the yield is much more, or on the long-dated bond, is much more finely attuned to inflationary pressures. So the big question then is, are we going to have an inflationary shock, or are we going to have a situation where investors simply don't have the appetite for to take on the risks of being presented by the mass deficits at a yield of 1.5% for a 30-year. There's been a lot of commentary about the interest rate differential between the USA and China, and China's government bond yield continued to march higher in here today, and it's up now to about 3.2%. Interestingly, that's pretty close to the level at which US Treasury yields pulled back in 2018. So it'll be interesting to see just how much further are we going to see these Chinese yields move. Of course, it's an emerging market, even though it is one of the largest economies in the world today. So then the question is, are we going to see a concerted move higher from here, or are we going to see the sequence of lower rally highs on a medium-term basis in fact hold? It's an awfully big question for bond investors. There is the potential that with some reticence among governments to increase their debt loads, then will the onus for responsibility for additional stimulus fall back on the central bank, and will they be forced to act? I think that is the perhaps most likely scenario, but yields may have to rally first in order to truly have an influence on government, or I guess central bank actions. The other significant conclusion or consensus that a lot of people have come to is that the oil sector is finished. But oil prices were well off their low in here today and firming now from the region of the trend mean, holding the $40 area. The energy sector has faced, I think, few challenges that approximate what we've seen over the course of this year. On the one hand, there was the massive hit to demand. There's also been some supply disruption, and the USA, for example, is producing at least a million barrels a day less than it was before the crisis. We're having some supply shut in, but then, of course, there has been this massive demand destruction. But is it destruction or delay? Because obviously, if we are moving into a period where we can start to think about recovery, then there is the potential that we could get into a supply inelasticity meets rising demand market. Because when we do get back into a growth footing for the global economy, then demand for oil will likely increase. And that is regardless of the fact that we have seen really incredibly impressive advances in the renewable energy sector. And it is every part of the renewable energy sector, whether that is the solar sector, wind, or hydrogen. They have all been doing fantastically well. But I think it's worth considering that they have done fantastically well already. They have already priced in the $2 trillion in additional spending from the EU, a similar amount from China and China's commitment to go carbon neutral by 2050. And then they're also pricing in the potential for a Biden win and the creation of an additional $2 trillion in spending for renewable energy in the USA. Well, if we're talking about $6 trillion on an international basis for renewable energy and potentially even charging facilities, well, then that's something that's obviously being priced into this market. But I think it is worth just considering that a lot of it is already in the price, and this BYD chart looks really very overextended and was down well off the highs in here today. Then we've got Tesla, despite the fact that they've got this big announcement next week, at least they're touting a big announcement next week. The share was in negative territory today, and then the solar sector was also in negative territory in here today, although it was off its lows. So we may be in for at least consolidation in the renewable energy sector. And then we have companies like Exxon, which have so far been able to hold on to their yield. The share was in positive territory today. It's approximating the lows from back in March, and it's yielding 10%. Well, 10% is really quite similar to the yield it had all the way back in 1980 at the beginning of the last bull market. It was considered to be an extraordinary yield if one could have captured it all the way back in 1980, and not least because of the spectacular advance in the shares subsequent to that. Well, the price today is still down approximately 65% from where it was in 2014. ExxonMobil produces more gas than oil. It's primarily a major natural gas producer than oil producer. That's really not been reflected in the price. Chevron, which has probably come through this crisis better than most, is well off its lows and is yielding around the 7% level. They've been paying a dividend for 100 years. So there's obviously the potential that dividends may have to be cut at some stage. But so far, they have done everything possible and within their power to sustain the dividend. And if we have a further recovery in the oil price, then the value that is being represented in the energy sector is obviously something that is going to start to become attractive to investors. So that's another one of these trades that has been a clear consensus move. And I think these are the really important ones, because there is obviously this very considerable bull market in the fixed income markets, and then we have had this catastrophic decline in the energy sector, and the clear perceptions that these situations will last indefinitely have become, I think, things that people just take for granted. Gold prices continue to rally, and or at least continue to hold the $1,900 area. Now, we've had some occasional bouts of volatility over the course of the last few weeks, but it is holding the region of $1,900 really quite admirably. That doesn't preclude the potential that it could drop down from this range and fully complete an overextension, complete the unwinding of the overextension relative to the trend mean. But so far, it is looking reasonably positive. Then silver was off its lows in here today. It hasn't quite yet been able to sustain the move above the $25 level, but it is holding the sequence of higher reaction lows from the nadir back at the end of September. When we then think about what's going on in the Eurozone, the negotiations between the US, between the UK and Europe remain fraught. There's a lot of competition. In fact, the entire discussion is about competition, because the UK obviously wants to hold on to as many avenues to enhance its competitive position relative to the EU as it can, while also retaining unfettered access to the customs union. And of course, the EU wants to extract as high a price for access to the EU's customs union as it can possibly achieve. So obviously there is this back and forth. So far, the 110 area has continued to hold on the pound-euro exchange rate. And as long as it is holding the lower side of the range, which is around the 108 area, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to the potential that a solution will be found. On the other hand, if the pound drops through 108, well, it would be a clear conclusion that investors are losing hope that a deal can in fact be reached. When we start to think about what exactly is going on in terms of currencies, well, every time it looks less likely that a fiscal deal will be reached in the USA, the dollar rallies. But gold is not responding to it in quite the same fashion any longer. The reality is that while the dollar is responding in the short term, this question of how to deal with these incredibly large deficits remains looming over the market. And when we eventually do see additional stimulative measures introduced, then it's likely to take a toll on the dollar. I do think that as long as the dollar is ranging below 100, there is the clear potential that it will in fact break lower. And if it does break lower, then it's likely to exceed the lows posted all the way back in 2008. And that, I think, is going to be one of the big questions for 2021, because when the dollar trends lower, it tends to be very positive for commodities. Now, oil is already starting to reflect some additional strength. Corn has pushed through the $4 area in here today and extending its advance. So we're seeing that both agricultural and energy commodities are breaking higher. Wheat prices have now completed their base formation. Soybeans has also been firming within its base and is pulling away from the 1,000 cent level. So that's, I think, rather that is suggestive of both increasing demand for these products and also the potential that investors are beginning to look for hedges against the potential for inflation. Copper prices continue to firm from the $3 area. So there's the clear potential that commodities are beginning to lead in terms of inflationary pressures. And that, of course, puts the onus back onto this whole question about interest rates. Now, central banks have been quite clear that they're willing to tolerate higher inflation. They've been courting inflation, but perhaps they haven't quite bargained on getting inflation quite so quickly. And that, again, is something we need to pay attention to. What it also holds out the prospect for is that emerging markets, precious metals and resources, and industrial-type companies are likely to be among the greatest beneficiaries of this transition. If the dollar is, in fact, peaking, then that is likely to change the investment rationale and I think probably will be the catalyst for a significant rotation. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.